Hello, Wired Jesus listeners. This is a corrected version of the December 31st, 2010 Wired Jesus podcast. The background music was a little too loud, and I didn't catch that until after it was posted. So here's a reposting with not quite as much background music, and hopefully my audio is a little clearer coming through. So this is Wired Jesus podcast. December 31st, 2010, Creative Commons license.
Initiating startup sequence.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
Wired Jesus Podcast. Wired Wanderings of a Postmodern Film.
God scares me.
Well, yeah, but just because God doesn't answer your prayers doesn't mean he doesn't care about you.
Well, then why didn't he give me what I wanted?
Well, God can't just answer every prayer and suddenly give you everything you want. That takes all the living out of life.
What do you mean?
Hello. And welcome to the Wired Jesus podcast, the Wired Wanderings of a Postmodern Pilgrim. I'm your host and fellow traveler, Tom Lieberg, and I'm glad you've come along for our journey together.
Pretty sight, it's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
I've always been a big REM fan. And this upbeat take on social woes and breakdowns has always made me smile. In an odd way, it's always been a song of faith for me, that in the face of crooked governments, compromised churches, and social breakdown, there are still voices willing to sing out that all this can pass away and we'll still be fine. As the book closes on 2010, I've become increasingly convinced that in the past 2 years, something significant died, and we're only realizing it now. There are the obvious signs you see in the news, the ongoing financial crisis as markets go up and down, and foreclosures keep going up, and unemployment stays high without any change. The world stage is marked by crazy actions of North Korea, Iran, and now Venezuela apparently is going to deploy missiles that can reach the Gulf Coast, yet the U.S. seems impotent to stop anything. Fractured government? Well, it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat, you're at each other's throats, but you agree on one thing, spending more. And you see the outbreaks and protests in Europe as governments are on the brink of, bankruptcy. And insolvency, and people responding back with protests and even violence. It's all that and more. Because I'm seeing it in religious life. Not that that should somehow be viewed as being separate from daily life, but that certainly is what our culture teaches. But long-established denominations seem to be reaching tipping points that after years of decline, they're now breaking apart over issues of morality and biblical authority and right doctrine, with each group taking its toys and money and walking away. On the congregational level, the economy, I think, to a greater extent is driving it, but the morality wars are part of it as well. It's changed how we do church. After the boom of the 80s and 90s, when churches could afford to hire lots of staff to do ministry for them, the unthinkable has now happened. The money isn't there. And in a time when there's actually a shortage of pastors, pastors are being laid off because churches are no longer flush with cash. Mega churches are scrabbling to come up with money to pay off huge mortgages. Willow Creek Church back in Chicago, not far from where I used to live, they laid off 25 full-time pastors in 2009. But it goes beyond just the mega churches, and they're doing that to pay off, you know, the massive campuses that they've built. Small congregations that have always struggled to provide for a full-time pastor are simply reducing pastors to part-time. And pastors themselves, well, the rule of thumb for recent decades was you own your own home rather than have the church supply a house, a parsonage for you. Well, pastors now find that if they are laid off or cut back, they can't relocate because their mortgages are underwater just like many other folks. So suddenly, without a glut of staff or the cash to pay staff, church members are wondering how to be the church. How do we do Christian education? Who's going to visit the sick? Who's going to preach? Who is going to do all the stuff that used to be paid for? I think just as importantly, paid for and done the way we wanted it. That, I think, leads me to the other factor in this, the demise of the baby boomer generation. I say that not in the sense of dying off, because the boomers still are in their 50s, but demise in the sense of relinquishing power. It seems to me that in a simple sense, boomers fall into two groups. The portion that identifies with the counterculture movement of the 60s and 70s, the civil rights movement, and so forth. And then you have the group that gained ascendancy in the 80s, the religious right group, the Jerry Falwell and company, and the evangelical movement. And these two groups, while they're both baby boomers, do not like each other. They are at opposite poles politically and religiously. And for the last 30 years, they've ascended and at different times have come to dominate leadership. But despite their differing views, they do hold one value in common, much as they hate to admit it. And that is the value of me first. What I've seen acted out in churches and on the political stage is this conviction that their views are right and everyone else is wrong. And even more than that, they are convinced that their views are right. Again, doesn't matter which poll you take it at. Not only are their views right, but for, how do I want to put this? For the benefit of others who don't understand, the rightness of their views have to be imposed on others. You know, it's the whole parental lie. Well, you know, you may not understand it or appreciate it, but we're doing it for your own good. And a consequence of that is really a lack of vision, of continuity for the future. You know, really any kind of significance or responsibility for future generations, if it means that they have to give up something for themselves, either in power now or benefits for themselves in retirement later. And so you see it in Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, but in the Republicans as much. This lame duck Congress has just been kind of the crowning achievement of their generational spending and power binge, and it's coming to an end. And it's my generation and my kids and their generation who painfully know that they will pay the cost of the boomers binging long after they're gone. So if you hang around on the blogosphere, there is a lot of anger directed at baby boomers, knowing that those of us who follow will be the first generation here in the United States that will not have a better lifestyle than their parents did. And we will live very differently and without those benefits until boomers and their baggage get off our back. It reminds me of a great moment from a movie called Guest Who's Coming to Dinner. Not the recent one, the original one that was done in the 1960s.
You listen to me. You say you don't want to tell me how to live my life. So what do you think you've been doing? You tell me what rights I've got or haven't got and what I owe to you for what you've done for me? Let me tell you something. I owe you nothing. If you carried that bag 1,000,000 miles, you did what you were supposed to do. Because you brought me into this world. And from that day, you owed me everything you could ever do for me, like I will owe my son if I ever have another. But you don't own me. You can't tell me when or where I'm out of line, or try to get me to live my life according to your rules. You don't even know what I am, Dad. You don't know who I am. You don't know how I feel, what I think. And if I try to explain it the rest of your life, you will never understand. You are 30 years older than I am. You and your whole lousy generation believes the way it was for you is the way it's got to be. And not until your whole generation has lain down and died will the dead weight of you be off our backs. You understand? You've got to get off my back.
It's a classic boomer movie, and one of my all-time favorites. Spencer Tracy and Sidney Poitier are just fantastic in this. But in this movie, done by baby boomers from their perspective and talking to their parents, it highlights the same generational problem we face today. Gen Xers and millennials admire their grandparents and great-grandparents because they did what they were supposed to. Postmoderns don't have much regard for their parents' generation. Boomers, as a generation, really don't come across as thinking they owed their kids anything, just themselves. But they do feel the need to tell everyone else how to live. Everything from regulating trans fats and Happy Meals in San Francisco to clamping down on the internet, and of course, how church should be done. And yet we as postmoderns, we look at all these demands, be it laws or expectations and other aspects of life, and we find out we lack the resources and the freedoms to follow through on boomer expectations. And so we walk away. We walk away from boomer models of government, their political parties, and their churches, leaving the over 50 crowd confused, hurt, and wondering, to use a line we often hear in churches, where are all the young people? The boomers don't understand, or perhaps are just realizing what they've wrought. And the result is, I would argue, the visible end of the world as the boomers know it. And they don't feel fine about it. So where am I going with all this? Am I going political instead of my usual wired wanderings? No. But I think it is part of it. Because as Jesus says, we are in the world but not of it. Well, if you're going to be in the world, you got to understand what's going on so you can carry on the conversation. And for decades, sociologists and church visionaries have been pointing to a convergence exactly like this. In the classic sociological book, The Fourth Turning, what we're seeing right now is a national crisis that will shape the next greatest generation, the millennials, my kids. It's on us right now. Voices in the church have also pointed that the affluent and entertaining American church, no matter its forms that it's taken over the last three decades, the prosperity gospel of TV evangelists, the social gospel of mainline denominations, or the evangelical conservative movement of the 80s, the trappings that supported them all could not be sustained in what is now a post-Christendom world. And so everyone's confused. There's no benchmark in our past or roadmap for our future for churches right now. Because no longer are the smallest congregations wrestling with the questions of survival and financial viability. Almost every congregation is, no matter its size. And with that really comes the scariest of all questions that we have avoided in the church in North America for decades. And that is the question of meaning. Why do we exist as a church? Is being church something more than an occasional Sunday morning and a membership in a club of people who believe like we do? Which is why I think we've basically taught ourselves over the last 50 years. All that is coming apart right now. It's the end of the church as American Christians have known it, and they don't feel fine. Now, looking around, I would say so. It is the end of the world as we know it, and I should feel fine. But there is a lot of pain as priorities, worldviews, and faith values get challenged and begin to crumble. As a pastor, I hear it in my office and in meetings. People know something old has passed away and it can't be brought back. On the other hand, though, some grasp the images and promises of the Bible. New wine cannot go into old wineskins. God's proclamation that I am making all things new. Or the vision at the end of the book of Revelation, not all the apocalypse and the other stuff that we tend to hear about, but rather a new heaven and a new earth of God coming down to dwell with his people, not catching us up in some magical rapture to be in heaven and removed. That hope moves people to rediscover the truth that after the resurrection, Jesus didn't leave the church to the apostles, to the pastor people. He gave it to everyone, for everyone to go out and make disciples. You read the book of Acts, and you read about Christian communities springing up all over the place while the apostles sat in Jerusalem. It was unknown people who shared this message of new life, abundant life, new beginnings in the face of an old world that ended on a cross. For us, the 21st century has become the first century again. A wide open world of people who don't know much about Jesus. It's a legacy of the boomers. They were our parents. Half of us were never raised in a religious tradition whatsoever. So we don't know. And when you see a world out of control and you're looking for faith or struggling with what that is, you begin to understand that now following Jesus doesn't mean waiting for or paying some leader to do it for you or having the right building. It's recognizing that Jesus is sending you personally and trusting you to do it yourself with those he's gathered around you. It's been interesting to watch how this shift is taking place as I talk with colleagues and observe things in our own community. Postmoderns are starting to realize that, you know, for all their flaws and errors, boomers are not the enemy. But they are as much a part of this emerging church as they are. And boomers are starting to learn from their kids that in politics and in faith, either or thinking, my way or the highway, doesn't work anymore. Not if you want a future. Boomers are learning to share with people they disagree with. If they can't, they walk away. But many more are staying. Because it's hard to give up drawing lines in the sand over doctrine, the Bible, and worship styles when you're used to being right all the time. But if the church is truly to be multi-generational, as it always has been and needs to be, yet today, then we're starting to rediscover that the meaning of life and the mission of the church is not about making us, those who happen to be in charge, happy. It's about following Jesus and serving like him. It's not the church as we've known it. It's something new, something we haven't seen for probably 50 years or more. And it's something I plan to do some more podcasts on, aspects of how this new world looks like and how we are being shaped to be church again. And so it's a pretty exciting time, but it's probably the most uncertain time in my life. Like I said, there's no roadmap, no marker in my past 20 years that can be used as a guide for what lies ahead. So I guess I'll have to rely on God instead. Trust that there's something bigger than I am, something more substantial than denominations and traditions, a greater resource than big offerings and bigger bank accounts. When it comes right down to it, I think we're figuring out that here at the end of the world as we know it, all we really have, and all we ever have had, and all we will have, is Jesus. And in that case, I feel fine. That's it for Wired Jesus number 56. Again, this is a corrected version. So enjoy and delete the previous one that was sent. Check out the few links that are on the webpage. Check out The Fourth Turning. I've got some other scripts coming up, one based off one of my Christmas Eve services that I got some great feedback from, but as my laptop is popping up and running out of juice here in the recording studio, I think I'm going to cut it short right now. So it's a new year, and while my production of podcasts has tapered off, resolutions are the order of the day. So even in infrequently Wired Jesus is a lifeline of creativity for me that I have no intention of giving up. So as we move into our sixth year together, thanks for listening, for the discussions and the gentle prodding. Check in on my Facebook page and here on the blog and see what's up. And so have a happy new year. And until the next podcast, thanks for listening and see you out there on the road.
What if God was one of us? Just a slot like one of us. Blue, 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 blue. Yeah, blah, blee, blee, blee. Well done.
Very good.
Dr. Evil, that was fantastic.
Thank you, number two.
I wrote that.
Yeah.